Feral Audio.
It's time for another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Why, hi. How's it going? I am very excited today because I have two very special guests. One of whom is in town from Seattle. His name is Matt Baum, and he has a fantastic podcast called Sewers of Paris, which he interviews LGBT people about a sort of a piece of pop culture that influenced them as a child, and just sort of and so I got to do one about a year ago. God, I don't remember when I did it, but I talked about the 1960s Batman show, and it was always on like many times throughout the day, and how much I loved it. And anyway, it's a great podcast. Check it out. It's called Sewers of Paris. And he's just in town for the weekend, so it worked out perfectly for him to be here. And then my second guest is the fantastic, the glorious, the amazing Lauren Lapkus, who we all know because she has a wonderful podcast called With Special Guest Lauren Lapkus. I'm going to say that again, With Special Guest Lauren Lapkus, which is another wonderful podcast in which she brings people on and she's their guest on their own podcast. So she gives her guest the hosting job and she comes on as a different character, and it is so funny. It's just crushingly, punishingly, poisonously, wonderfully perfect. And she's also on a show called Crashing on HBO with Pete Holmes, and watch it. She plays his wife on Crashing on HBO. So I'm just really excited to welcome both of them to the show. And I know last week I talked about Gary Austin who passed away, and I was going to talk about something else, but I just had another friend of mine and someone who was beloved in the comedy community pass away yesterday, and I wanted to just give another tribute. Sorry to be maudlin, but also not sorry. I want to celebrate this person's life. And his name was Gary Shapiro. He and I did a lot of shows together in just around LA, a lot of storytelling shows on something called Sit and Spin, where we just get up and tell stories. And he did a lot of music with that. So he would always come out in these crazy costumes and we just sing these insanely, wildly, inappropriately filthy songs. And Gary was just somebody who always wanted to make everybody around him happy. And that's what I immediately thought last night when I got the news that he had passed away. It was every time you were around him, he had a joke. He was someone that was always on with a joke in a really delightful way, in some way that I could never be. I'm always sort of taken aback and amazed by these kind of magician people who are always kind of on, because I always kind of feel like I'm kind of dull and, thanks for listening to my podcast. But he wanted to make you laugh in the moment, on the spot, right then and right there. He always had weed on him. It was like he always wanted to get everybody high. He wanted everyone to feel as great as he was feeling. And he also, there were these great moments, and I think about how he would really take a time to compliment people and let them know how much he thought of their talent. And he, that was always in him to do. And he just would always be at the parties, and he's the life of the party, but he would pull you aside and be like, I just want you to know, I think you're really great and really funny. And which a lot of people don't do directly like that. And, you know, I wish I had more of a specific story with him, other than we just did. We always ended up in these lineups together. We ended up at these crazy parties together, and he was always there. And I just think about the blessing and the curse of being in this business, because you know so many people, and in a lot of ways more intimately than people who don't do this know each other, because you have to immediately be vulnerable and naked. And sometimes you work on something together for a day, but you're there for 12 hours and you have a lot of downtime and you get to know each other really well. Or sometimes you have to make out with someone you just met, or you have to cry and weep and dig into your soul with this person that you've just met. And so it makes you very bonded. I mean, there are people, you know, LA, you know, everybody laughs about, because everybody talks about my best friend, everyone's my good friend so-and-so, my good friend so-and-so. And I think, yes, a lot of that is the gross game of we want everyone to know that we're friends with very important people. But I also think there's the part of us that we come out here to do this because there's part of us that really wants to have these intense friendships and we want to be deeply understood and we want everyone to love us. And there are so many people in this that we get to know. I feel so lucky that I know some of the funniest, smartest, most fucked up people. But then on the other hand, there's a sadness to it because you don't really know them as well. You're very separated. You go for months or years without seeing people and people that you refer to as your really good friend or, you know, and then, you know, there are people like Gary, who I always loved and enjoyed. And he was not a close friend, but I definitely considered him a friend. And I definitely saw him. And I always felt like he saw me. And that is something that makes me very, very grateful. And he is online. Check him out, Gary Shapiro. Check out his stuff. And always just like, you know, don't be afraid to tell somebody that you think they're great, or to, you know, make them smile with jokes or drugs or compliments or anything. Thank you, Gary. This is like way too early to say goodbye. Oh my God. I'm sitting here with Lauren Lapkus and Matt Baum. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How are y'all?
Very well. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm great. I'm really great. I think this is the first time. This is terrible. It's 1 p.m. and this might be the first time I've talked all day out loud. And so, like, I sound a little hoarse, but other than that, I think I'm fine.
No, you sound classy.
Oh, thank you. Nice. I sound scotchy.
Yeah, exactly.
I took a nice, like, hour and a half nap right before coming here. So I
you
feel
did?
A little weird.
Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful. So, what time did you get up this morning?
I got up at like 8. I had a dermatologist appointment. So, I got up and went and drove really far and did all that. And then I came home and I'm like, I'm exhausted.
I'm taking a nap. But those are also. So, I mean, all that stuff is exhausting. My dermatologist and dentist and everything are on the other side of town. And it's a lot. And it's also emotional, even when you're just going to just get like a mole check or something easy. But like I get that.
Yeah.
You're getting poked and prodded.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I had an appointment for, I just had like a bump. And, you know, like every time I have a bump, it's like, oh, well, that's the end of my life.
That's it. That was it.
Exactly. And then, so everything is, of course, totally fine. But the doctor was like, how's your vitamin D? And I'm like, I don't know. What?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I live in Seattle. And so it's overcast and gray all the time.
Right.
And she's like, let's check your vitamin D, like out of nowhere. And turns out normal levels are like around 70 or so. And my levels were like 5. So,
oh, my gosh.
How do you test it?
They just a little bit of blood. And
wow.
Yeah. And so.
So do you just drink a lot of milk or how do you get vitamin D?
You could either just like go on an all tuna fish all the time diet or you can take pills. And so you can take like a little supplement.
I was just in London for 4 months and I was getting very depressed from the gloom. Mm-hmm. And I started taking vitamin D pills and even if it was a placebo, I felt happier.
Yeah.
I was like,
really?
Yay, my
really?
Little pills.
Yep. Yeah.
That is so crazy because we're here and we're with the sun all the time and we complain about it. And like, it's been very windy this week in LA. And like these crazy winds. But like, that's it. Like, that's what we talk about. Like this morning I woke up and I walked into my kitchen and I left the windows open. I have these like slatted like windows. Like my building's like a 60s building. And so I left the windows open all night and the wind was howling all night. And I just didn't really hear it or I just slept right through it. But I woke up and a roll of paper towels had blown into the sink and they were completely just like soaked. And I walked in, I looked at the roll of paper towels and I just said, the wind. And I was like, what like Douglas Sirk movie am I in right now? Where I'm walking in and like clutching my pearls like, the wind. Like, who was that for? And why was I so dramatic about it? But like, that's how we are at LA. Like, it's like if it's windy or if it rains, it's like you'll hear about it for weeks and everyone's like, but the weather in other places, it is like, you know, and Seattle's known for being very cloudy and gloomy, as is London. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember watching Doctor Who as a child and being like, it's so foggy there all the time. And like, that was what London was to me as a kid. And Matt, you are, we hung out in Seattle. I spent the greatest week in Seattle, had the best time. Yay. I love it up there.
It's the best city. I love it so much.
And how long have you been there?
2.5 years or
okay.
so. I was in LA, and mm-hmm. then so I was here. I was working on the Prop 8 trial. I was doing a lot of marriage equality communication stuff, and then we won! Hooray! And
yay!
Gay marriage returns. And so my partner and I are like, okay, look, we don't like to drive. We don't like the heat. Maybe this isn't the city for us.
Uh-huh.
So we did this big road trip around the country, and we drove from LA up to Seattle, and then we drove from Seattle to Chicago, and then Maine, and then we drove back down through Pennsylvania to Denver, and along
wow.
the way.
Wow!
Yeah, so we were auditioning cities to be like, what do we like?
You went Pennsylvania
that's
to Denver?
So awesome.
Yeah. So you just cut out the whole Southeast.
Well, here's
you're
the thing.
Like, we don't need to look at, you know,
we were like,
Decatur.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure there's lovely things out in the Alabamas and Mississippis and Tennessees and things. But yeah, I mean, the whole point of leaving LA was like, we hate the heat. So maybe not the South.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, just for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to be the, you know,
yes.
gay couple in the South. I mean, not that there are plenty of, you know, happy, thriving gay people in the South, but yes, I get it.
And then, like, on that trip, the other thing that we were doing was we were interviewing all these queer gamers, and so, like, around the country, we were just stopping into every town, because I'm a journalist, and my partner works in the game industry, and so we were just doing these video interviews with gamers about, like, oh, what's it like to be a queer gamer where those two things collide with each other?
That's so interesting. We were kind of talking about that before. Can you talk, you're making a documentary about that, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. It's called Playing with Pride, and you can go to playingwithpride.com.
Yeah,
and
I love
so
that
we've
title.
Talked to, like, over 100 people about
wow.
being at that intersection.
That's so cool.
Where, yeah.
Like, I'm an outsider, like a double closeted, basically. Uh-huh. Like, I can't tell people I'm a geek, and I can't tell people I'm gay. And when I go to Pride, nobody wants to play Risk. And when I go to my game night, nobody wants to talk about queer stuff. Nobody understands what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's Raining Men.
Sure.
The first gay reference that comes to mind.
The Weather Girl.
Come in singing that.
Sure.
Yeah. And you're dressed exactly like Antoine Merriweather from Living Color. So, you know, hey, we get it. Loud and clear. Yeah. That is so interesting, though, because we were also talking about, like, you know, in gay culture, like, not what's celebrated is the sort of is the hot, loud, the divas, the, you know, the Real Housewives, just that what's in our culture to, like, to be like, that's what gay people should all want to talk about. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're like a gay nerd, which is definitely what I am, it's like, I want to go to a gay party and talk about, you know, like, weird, obscure B-list, you know, actresses or, like, weird indie movies or whatever. And, like, that's sort of, like, not what a lot of people want to talk about. And that's, yeah. I think it's similar, like, what you're, like, with the gaming thing. And then I'm sure a lot of gamers are straight. And so that's also, like, you get into sort of a culture. And you don't want to just be the guy who brings up all the gay stuff all the time because you're the
yeah.
gay guy. But you are shaped by that.
We talked to one guy who's like, when I come out, I let people know you get one question, because I'm tired of, like, I get we don't have to be the ambassador for whatever
right.
we are, but he's like, I'm just so sick of answering every single question everyone's ever had, because he lives in the middle of nowhere, and, like, he's often the first gay person people know that they've met.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
I can't imagine.
Yeah, like, can you imagine, like, being like, that is it?
Like, and you're an adult, and you're like, I've never met one.
Yeah,
like,
I know. What? In 2017.
Who pays for dinner? Who leads when you dance? You know.
Do you eat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know what the questions would be. I guess, like, I take it for granted that I grew up in a place that had all different types of people, but, like,
right.
what would someone be asking him?
Oh, well, dreadfully, there's always the sex questions, which is like,
people
oh, right.
just straight out ask that?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, they do.
That's
but
so
that's
weird.
That's the weird thing is that, like, it immediately sexualizes you
mm-hmm.
by,
yeah.
by being gay. It's like the thing where you're like, yeah, I'm gay whether or not I have sex. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. that, you
right.
know, you, and it's like Jackie Beat really said it on one of the earliest episodes of the show. She was like, you know, like, guys in prison can have sex with each other and that doesn't make them gay. You know, I can be gay and not have sex. You know, it's like a thing where you're like, sex and sexual identity are very different.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, they do want to know that a lot of the time. And that was so,
so weird.
Strange.
Yeah. And then there's always, like, the which one's the girl, or, you know, whatever, like, who's the housekeeper.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So it's, like, wrapped in misogyny and all kinds of crap.
That is insane.
Where did you grow up, Lauren?
I grew up in Evanston, Illinois, which
okay.
is right outside of Chicago.
Sure. And that's where, what's the school that I'm...
Northwestern,
yes. Thank you. I was like, there's a... That
I was going to say,
there.
Jeremy Piven's from there. Is that what you're getting at? yes, he's from there.
So we're going to talk about Entourage for the next hour. Okay.
And
so
that's
who's your
favorite?
Are
revelation.
You more of a turtle or no?
And the Cusacks also.
Oh, yeah.
Nice little claim.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the Pivens and the Cusacks, they they were all big theater people in Chicago,
yes, and
right?
And there is the Piven Theater in Evanston.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Did you ever work with them?
No, I have not, and it is a dream. I love Joan Cusack as well. Yeah.
I got to do you know Shira Piven? Surely.
No, yeah. I never did the theater. I actively didn't do it when I was a kid. I was like, my friends were doing it. I was like, no, even though I really wanted to.
Oh, I love that. That's so funny.
A lot of my friends were taught by her and Byrne Piven as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because Shira has done a bunch of workshops and stuff out here, and I've done classes with her. And she's amazing, and you know, and just so the tiniest bit of that Piven training and that from that and Cusack and all that. It's great. And it's like, I loved going into, I was like, oh, I feel like I'm really back in school because like they are legit. Like
yeah.
The real deal thing. Well, but it's so fascinating. And there's so many people who become adults, who become actors as adults. That's what I'm going to say. Have this weird resistance as a kid to doing it. What was that about? What do you think?
I did like plays. We had a children's theater in my town where like you could audition and do like a play just like in general. It was at like, the community center. And I did some of that. But I didn't want to take classes. I think I was afraid of like looking dumb or something. I don't know if that's what it was. I didn't put my finger on it at the time. But like I think I was just like, oh, no, I don't want to do it. And I always quit everything I did. So it was probably better that I didn't. Because like I took every kind of class in the world and quit. So if I was like didn't get it right away.
Right.
And so then I started doing theater, trying to do it in high school, and I wouldn't get into any play, probably because it's a class. And
that's
then
so
now
funny.
That I think of it. And then
she thinks she's too good for voice workshop, so she doesn't get to be in our town today.
No. And then I did start to get into we had like a show every year called Yamo, which was a kind of an offshoot of Northwestern's variety show called something else similar to that, which I can't remember the name of, and Yamu or something. And so we would do, like, students would write and direct and act in it. And I would get into that every year.
Okay.
Because it was funny and, like, sketches,
right,
basically.
Right.
And then I had a teacher recommend that I take improv. So that's how I started, like, doing that. But it wasn't until I was a senior.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny, too, because I think people that gravitate toward improv and sketch comedy have a really weird relationship to theater and growing up. And like, I mean, I was a theater major in college, but I didn't go to school to do that. But I went to a small school and I was able to be in a lot of plays. And so I did a lot of theater, and we actually had a sketch comedy group in college that I was not a part of. So, but I always had a hard time finding like my role. Like I was always, I mean, because like I've always been tall, and so I was usually like the dad and things, but I was never really allowed to be that funny and things, or occasionally I would get a funny part, but like there was this weird, like I was always funnier off stage than what I got to do on stage. And it was like, okay, stop all that horseplay and do real quality theater and real acting, you know? And I'm so glad I did all of that. And I try and go see like really legit theater whenever I can, because I love watching it, because I'm like, wow, I could never do that. And it's so amazing. But it is funny how like, you know, you kind of are misunderstood, or you wouldn't misunderstand yourself even as a kid. Like, because you're never really told at an early age, like, you're it, kid. Like, you have this thing. You kind of define it on your own.
Yes.
And go, I'm kind of weird and different, and maybe I should do this improv and sketch thing. And you sort of come about it from a different place than like the, you know, this like young star talent that's like discovered in the rough.
Right. You know. Yeah. And I remember auditioning for all the musicals and plays and like really taking it seriously, like the audition, and really wanting it and being devastated when I didn't get it. And I look back and I'm like, but that I wasn't supposed to be doing that. Like, I wasn't supposed to be in the Shakespeare play.
Yeah,
like,
no,
I
know.
Wouldn't have made sense.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
No. And that's the same with me, too. Then I think about, like, well, what part would I do in that? You know, and it's like you have to sort of carve out your own way, because, like, you know, yeah. And I'm so glad I did that, but like I have zero desire to ever do Shakespeare again.
Anything,
you know, or I'll go see like last year I went and saw Long Day's Journey Tonight, and I'm like, wow, 4 hours of Eugene O'Neill, Jessica Lange, Michael Shannon, amazing. I would never want to do this. I'm thinking that they're doing this 8 times a week.
Isn't that crazy?
There's just no way I would even want to.
Yeah.
They're doing the best of everything. And I'm like, you know what? I'm good. Am I lazy? Am I just, you know, not talent? I don't know. But, you know, But yeah, I mean, it's like there's room for everybody in the whole
thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I think doing the same show every night over and over again for months would make me feel insane, but or I would just get, I don't know what I would get.
Well, I just closed a play and we did 11 weeks and it was this, wow. You know, and but we only did four. Sometimes when we were in the middle of the run, we did five shows a week and it was a lot and I was really ready for it to be done. And that's nothing compared to how right. the New York schedule is. And it's like, I don't understand how they do that. And yeah, you do start to feel crazy because like, you know, you go through the whole rehearsal process and then you do a couple previews and you're like sort of, and then our show was a comedy. So like we had to like really, and it was really broad in a really small space. So we were like, we have no idea what's funny. We have no idea what's going to work. And so it took that and then it took a couple of weeks of us doing it. And then I finally, we hit our groove and I'm like, I'm so glad we get to do this. And, you know, and then you get to this point where you're like, I cannot believe I'm going to say the same things over and over again because your improv brain kicks in and you're going to be like, let's change it up. Let's
right.
do it differently. Let's try something new. And that's, and you have to keep the same thing over and over again. There's a discipline. It's like a muscle and you have to be able to do it. Yeah. Every time. And there were actors in the show. I mean, most of them were not improvisers. They were just really great trained actors. And you couldn't go off and just do something differently because it would throw them. And then you're just this dick that's like yeah. bored. It's like, oh, you're bored, Drew. Okay. This person's there with you, like trying to do this, play, you know, but it's a very different.
I was just listening to Rory O'Malley talking about something similar. So he's the king in Hamilton now. Uh-huh. He was on uh-huh. Book of Mormon. He was in everything.
Right, right.
And
he's great.
Lovely. I actually met him when because he was working on the Prop 8 stuff as well from
oh,
Broadway
great.
Impact.
Okay.
So he was a big activist for marriage equality. Anyway, so he's the king in Hamilton in San Francisco, I think now.
Okay. Yes, and I think
was,
you're right.
Yeah, he was saying that they do so much like publicity stuff and so much like out, like offstage, like stuff that around the show that now when it's time to just like, okay, it's time for the show, curtain goes up, and now we're going to be in the characters and we're doing it. It's such a relief. It's like you time off that you know, I'm just doing my
yeah.
routine.
Yeah, that was, yeah, that's, I'm sure for a show like that, I mean, the buzz and the whole thing and you're constantly going and doing and that's, that was when I did my, I'm making this all about me. When I did Hamilton, no, I didn't. No, but
wish.
Like when I was dying, no, I would love it. But I remember that feeling of like having to go and do interviews when I was doing my solo show and you go and you're doing all this stuff and you're, and that's a whole different muscle. And then when I, yes, when I finally got on stage to just do my thing, it was like, whew, now I can do this.
Yeah.
Because it's, that's, it is, that's a lot. That's just, and it's just a lot of energy. And then you don't ever know the energy of the person that's interviewing you and they might be lovely and fun and easy, or they might be like, and I don't understand how actors do it when they're on these like junkets at like
it's
6 a.m. And it's
I've
just,
never had to do like something that intense.
Yeah. Wait, have you had to do any of that with
I've done like just little like interviews with like 10 people at a table at a time uh-huh. or whatever. And it's, I find it so stressful. And I end up saying, I just ramble and say stuff I don't mean to say, like bringing up like right. politics or something. And then I'm like, well, I didn't want to talk about this. They were just letting me go. And I just like said shit I didn't want to talk about. And like,
I just think so many times actors must just be tired and they just are hungry. I think it's like basic human things are going on for them. And they say something insane and then and they must feel like, I'm like, I don't really feel that. I don't really think that.
Yeah.
Or I just needed a nap or I yeah. needed a sandwich. And
I just want to have an answer.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, too, that I've seen when I've learned from actors who do this so much more than I do, they just don't answer a question and then you can move on. And I think for me, I'm like, I can't not answer
I've
a question.
I've never considered, my mind is blown right now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah,
could
yeah.
just go like, oh, I don't know or something.
Yes, exactly. And then it won't end up in the interview because if they don't want to talk about it, you just don't answer it. And you're like, oh, right, you can do that. And that's actually totally valid because I just think like, okay, we're going to talk about this thing. I don't really want to talk about it or blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to, or they'll just ask you some insane question that there is no good answer to. And so you don't always know. And I've seen from other actors that they'll just go, oh, I don't know.
Oh my God.
And then they'll just stop.
This is like a new tool. This
yeah.
is amazing.
And you can be, you know, you can be nice about it or you can say, oh, right. I don't really know anything about that. I'm sorry. That was a great question, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You can do that. And then people have to move on. And that, and it's like such a relief because I'm so, and I think it is, it goes back to that improv thing where you're like, oh,
I
yes
can sweat
and.
My way into yeah, an answer.
I'll
right
find
now.
An answer. Yeah. I will bullshit my way in. Like, sometimes you don't want to do that yeah. because you don't have anything to say and you feel like you have to.
Yes.
And you're not doing it in, as a character. You are doing it as yourself. And then people finally, they hear that and they go, I think that person's an idiot. And you're like, maybe they're just tired or hungry or they were asked a really hard question.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
I will say, like, as someone who's on the other side of the table, like, I'm often interviewing people, and, like, two things can happen with one of those weird questions. Yeah. Either, like, I can see that the wheels are turning and the person's trying to come up with something good, and I'm like, oh, this isn't working for either. Like, I can't use anything that you're saying right
now. Yeah.
Or, like, they'll just hoist themselves on a petard that is just unbelievable. Like, I was interviewing this guy, like, a gay conservative.
Oh boy! And,
yes, there's a lot to
fascinating.
About that.
I'm fascinated actually by not to poo-poo it anyway.
And like clearly, this was a younger person who was in his 20s. This was recent, and he was trying to educate me about the HIV epidemic. And he's telling me all about it. And I'm like, all right, I can tell you have no idea what you're talking about. And then he like started saying things about how like he would have been supportive of quarantining all gay people. And I know. And I'm like, I'm just gonna let you talk because like. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to put any of my judgment into this piece because I'm just going to say what you're saying.
It's all right here.
Yep. Keep going. Keep digging that grave.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy? Oh my God. And I just give you so much props for just being quiet.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I couldn't be. Because I'm 40 and I'm too young to really know about the AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't talk about the AIDS epidemic because I was alive during it, but I was like in North Carolina and elementary school and it wasn't affecting me. So I can't imagine, like, you know, I mean, it affected me on a deep level that I saw that and I was like, oh, like, one day I'm going to have to deal with that. Like, I mean, I knew on some weird core level. And that's as much as I can really talk about it on a personal level. I mean, I can't imagine.
No, and I actually think the power of just asking a question and sitting there is really amazing because I feel like my instinct would be like, you're trying to say, and like,
right.
help them or something, but it's like, don't help them.
No, exactly.
It's really
hard. Let them hang themselves on that, on all of that. And also, you know, then my heart goes out to someone that's young that just doesn't know better and is just talking out of their ass. And I'm like, I hope in 10, 20, whatever years you look back on this and go, God, what was I doing?
Yeah. We all made mistakes.
I'm very thankful that so many like outlets were not available for me when I was 20 and thought I knew everything.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, cause it's like, I can't imagine how I would just be like, well, here's the thing.
Even just World Twitter. Like if you had Twitter and you were just putting out your stupid thoughts all day.
Oh my God. Can you imagine we were in high school and we had Twitter? Like I can't imagine the things I would say. I would have been so nasty about people. I would have been like, how can we prank so-and-so or whatever? And it would have been awful. I think I would have been horrible.
I mean, I had a blog back in the day when everybody had a blog. And like it's on archive.org.
Is that a thing that like has everything that ever was?
It's supposed to. It doesn't have like everything.
Oh no, because I had a blog too that I hope is going to be preserved.
You should go check. And so I went back and I found it because I didn't save anything from this blog. And I'm like, oh man, I was an asshole. I was just like, I'm mortified at like me saying things like, I was actually fairly conservative of myself for some reason in my mid-20s. It might have been just kind of like a knee-jerk thing. I was living in San Francisco and it was, you know,
I think
goes.
Living in San Francisco would make me skew more conservative. I really do because it's insane there.
Yeah. But, you know, I'd write something about like how, well, rich people deserve to be rich. And I'm like, who is this horrible person?
Everyone deserves to be where they are in their life.
And everybody gets what they deserve.
All is right in the world, you know, and we all have equal opportunities. We're in America, so
everyone has a chance. And if you didn't get it, it's your fault.
Yeah, sorry.
You could have tried harder.
Have you guys heard Dave Holmes's interview or read his interview with Mike Huckabee?
No.
Well, that is amazing.
Wow.
Excuse me. Sorry. He does this amazing article where he basically just interviews Mike Huckabee about his comedy. And just he goes on and on about comedy and like, sorry, if you're a snowflake or a cook and you don't get my style, that's just my thing. Don't follow me. And that was a thing where Dave just sits back and lets him go. And it's this amazing thing where he just feels like he's, you know, so supported. And Huckabee's just going on and on about like how to tell a joke. And it's fascinating. I highly recommend it. And it's just like, wow, this guy is just like just up his own ass. And again, let him hang himself. Because the minute you start criticizing, they will shut down and then you're done. And then as a journalist, you're not really giving fair, you know, reporting. You're kind of saying, but don't you think, and you skew a lot more. I mean, I feel like I'm too opinionated to be able to do that. I mean, you know, that's amazing.
At the end of my interview with this gay conservative guy, I think he detected that I was skeptical of some of the things that he said. And so he ended the conversation by saying, I hope I don't come off poorly in your article. I hope you don't say anything bad about me. And I mean, what could I say to that? So I just said, I won't write anything you didn't say.
Yeah.
That's really great. Yeah. Yeah, 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 exactly. And yeah.
Oh my God.
And also, just then don't be a dick.
Yeah,
that's the thing that I don't understand. People are like, I don't want you to show, you know, don't paint me in a negative light. Well, then don't be in a negative light.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, just at least say, I don't know anything but my own perspective and this is how I feel. At least go from there. But you don't when you're generally in that age. You're not that aware. You're just kind of saying, listen, I have this opinion. This is in me. It's so full. It's my faith. And I know exactly what I feel.
Oh,
and
yeah. Just like, well, I feel that way even looking at old emails that I wrote when I was like in my early 20s.
Oh,
to like guys or something like where I thought I like was like handling it really well. And then I'll look at it and I'm like, that was the most insane garbage to write to that person. Like you didn't know anything.
Right, right.
Ugh.
And you write, and yeah, I know. I read emails and stuff, and I get like so carried away and florid, and I'm just be like, you know, ugh, barf.
It's embarrassing.
Well, I want to hear stories or revelations or whatevers from either of you, both of you.
Well, so speaking of dumb mistakes we made when we were young, can I tell you the story of the what I'm now convinced was an extremely niche pornographic film that I was in? Like
what?
What?
Oh my God! What?
Upon yes, my arrival please. In Los Angeles.
Yes, yes.
So,
yes,
oh, I'm
and
so
yes.
excited.
So I'm all of 21, and I just moved to LA. Like. A few weeks earlier, I was going to Emerson College and they all just dump everybody in Los Angeles because you're all film majors and what are you going to do in Boston?
Sure.
So they just ship everybody out to LA and they're like, get an internship. So I got an internship. It was at the Jim Henson Company. I was so excited. I was like, I'm a big snob about the Muppets.
Sure.
And so I was super jazzed about this. But it was also unpaid. So I'm looking on Craigslist and, you know, I know the internship's going to end and I'm looking for jobs and gigs and I showbiz. So I find this Craigslist posting where someone's like, we need extras for a crowd around a fight, pays $20. And okay, sure. That yeah. seems like showbiz. I'll do that. So I
sure.
email the guy. His name is Randy and he writes back to me and he's like, okay, yeah, this is great. We'd love to have you. I just would like
is
to.
Randy Blue.
It's a perfect name for. Well, so anyway, his name
Randy Blue is a big famous gay porn site for I know
oh.
no one else knows that but me but okay. yes okay
it was sure. maybe
surely it wasn't I mean
maybe
I'm
that's
sure
what,
Randy Blue is a made up name and I'm sure if it was a real person it wasn't him directly emailing you but
I
you never know
so his name was Randy and he has a production company called Rat Hole Films so
okay.
maybe it was Randy Blue
okay Rat Hole
that's amazing
sounds promising
yeah So, he's like, I just want to meet up with you and walk you through the scene that we're going to be doing. And I was like, oh, that's a little weird for like extra work, but okay, sure.
Okay,
and
yeah.
So, he's like, where do you work? I could just come by your work. And I mean, thank
so
God.
Weird.
So weird.
Yes. Randy's just traveling around town to meet with all the extras. I'll meet you at your work.
What a psycho.
Yeah, what's your mom's name? We'll bring her to lunch. We'll go with her. And
thank God I was not like, yeah, sure, come on the Henson lot. That's which is
right.
So
right.
instead, I was like, maybe we could just meet up. Like there's a Wendy's down the street on La Brea or whatever.
That's good.
So we met up in the parking lot of a Wendy's and
oh my God, the parking lot!
Yep.
You didn't even go in. You
didn't
get
even
a frosty.
He just wanted to tell me about his film. It's this post-apocalyptic androids taking over the Earth and they're fighting with each other. And the only way that the androids can kill each other is by stabbing each other in the belly button. And so,
ew.
By the way, the fight scene's all going to be topless. And so we need everyone to take their shirt off. So I just need to take a Polaroid of you with your shirt off.
Oh my God, in the parking lot of a Wendy's.
Oh, okay. Oh, what a creep.
My God.
And so I'm like, okay.
I mean, of course.
Yeah, naturally.
Right. Yeah.
This is just how it works.
Yeah.
And so, like, I take my shirt off and he takes a Polaroid of me against the wall of the Wendy's. Like, drive-through people are driving by past us. And I'm like,
getting their chili and their tenders.
So he's like, okay, and we're going to be shooting the scene in 2 days in Runyon Canyon. So just meet by the gates at Runyon Canyon. Yeah.
Meet by the gates. No call sheet. Just meet by the gates.
Exactly.
So okay.
So I show up 2 days later. It's on my lunch break from this internship, and I meet him there, and there he is. And he's with the one other actor in the scene. There's just the two of us who are going to be acting in this scene.
I'm shocked.
Oh my God, I can't believe he didn't get throngs of extras.
Yeah, and so it's me and this other guy. The other guy was this slightly taller, very chisel-faced Christian a cappella singer.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful.
All those
blonde,
levels.
Very like Aryan features. And so Randy is, you know, he's kind of, I'd say, like he seemed like a million years old to me. He's probably like mid-40s or so. And he was holding a little consumer handycam camcorder, and that's what we're going to be shooting the film on. And so we're walking up into Runyon Canyon, and he's telling us about how Kurt Vonnegut is involved in this project.
Of course he is.
Naturally. And then we take some detour, and like we're off like in the underbrush, and like in some, like what I now recognize is just a cruising spot. Clearly.
Yeah.
And so it's up against like the rubble of some building that used to be there, and he's like, all right, so just get your shirts off, and we're going to get, you know, put suntan lotion on each other because we're going to be out here, or sunscreen on each other because we're going to be out here a while. And
oh my God.
Your faces, by the way. Did he film that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. briefly, that was not the focus. So then he was very intent about, here's the blocking. Like, you're going to be up against
the
wall.
Well, he's an auteur.
Yes.
He knows what he wants. Yeah, sure.
You're going to be up against the wall, and the other one is like the other android, and you're both androids, by the way. Yeah. And you have to be, by the way, you're androids and you're shirtless, but you're also wearing like 1999 like acid wash jeans with like the braided leather belts.
Oh.
He brought those?
No, that's what I was wearing.
Okay.
I was quite the fashion plate. Yeah, but I mean, we're dressed like it's 2001.
Okay, yeah.
Because it was.
Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, and so he's like, you're pushed up against the wall and you're resisting and you're struggling, and then you throw each other to the side, and then you have a fake knife. Here's the fake knife, and like, thank God I tested to make sure, okay, it's got a spring in it.
Good.
And, yeah. And like, then you stab in the belly button, and then the other one dies and like falls over, and we're just going to shoot that. And we shot that, and we shot that, and we shot that, and we shot that. And it went on and on and on. By the way, Randy was apparently not aware that when a scene is over, you say cut. So we would just like be rolling around in the dirt in Running Canyon.
Oh, he was aware.
Grappling. Yeah. Yeah. So, and like occasionally I'd like glance over to him like, are we done? Is that it? And like,
and he probably loved that too.
He's watching them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And so first I was the bad
who's
guy
the
with
player
the knife.
And who's being played?
Who watches us.
Yeah. Who will watch the watchman?
And like then it would switch, and like then he's the bad guy, and we're, you know, there's a little fake blood.
And, yeah. Oh my God.
And then we're done. And the scene is shot, and Randy's like, okay, that was great, you guys. This is really good. So we're going to, you know, we've got this whole other project that we're working on, and if you just give me your address, I'll send you the finished project. And so naturally, I gave him my address. Of course I did.
Of course you do.
You got to see the film.
Yeah. And sure enough.
Copy credit meals. That's what you're given these Craigslist movies.
True to his word, a few weeks later, a VHS tape shows up.
A few weeks later?
Yeah. With just the footage. No, there's no project. There's no anything else.
Oh, okay.
It's just 45 minutes of me and this guy grappling and stabbing each other in the belly buttons over and over and over.
What?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
and I still have the tape.
Oh, God. Like, just raw footage.
Just
like,
raw
what are
footage,
you going to do with
raw
that?
Raw VHS footage.
That is
great.
So weird.
I'll put it on my
so
reel.
So strange.
Yeah.
So weird. And did you ever see the movie?
No, I have searched for this man. I've searched for Rat Hole Films. Like, nothing has ever come of any of this other than I have this tape of me at, like, the age of 21 being absolutely mortifying and in this fight. But he did send, like, he actually sent the tape, which I think is very honorable.
I also love, he pitched it as it was, you were going to be an extra.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? I want to know what happened.
I know, exactly. Like, you're going to be watching a fight. So in his mind, it was going to be like all these other things, but he saw you and he's like, oh, that's a star.
This is all we need.
Or like, did he think like hundreds of people are going to reply and then he got two and he was like, well, I guess those are the leads now.
Yeah, like, I know. I wonder. Like, yeah, exactly. Were people rejected for this job?
Yeah, no, you won't do it all.
No, exactly.
He won't meet me at Wendy's, so.
And that was the other thing. I wonder like how many people were just like, this is weird. But I mean, I feel like I did so many things when I moved out here that I look back now and I'm like, that
I know,
is
it's kind of reminding me.
Horrible. Like, I know. I mean, I remember with like Backstage West, and I would go and audition for things. Like, I auditioned in this one guy's apartment. I had to go into his bedroom, and it was a movie about like a school shooting, and I had to like act like someone had just been shot in front of me, and I'm filming an audition in this guy's bedroom. And it was like dark in his bedroom, and it was just so strange. And, you know, you just think about like all this stuff, and it's just like, and then all these people that just prey on new actors and people that just need money, and they'll just tell you everything and any remote. And it's just like, there's so many vultures here. It's so gross, you know, and.
Well, and I think you also end up putting yourself in these positions a lot because you are looking for opportunities.
Right.
And so your gut is telling you it's wrong, but you're like, what if it's not? And what if it's
right.
good? And like,
mm-hmm.
I just had one recently, which feels like it shouldn't be possible because I feel like I'm old enough that I should like not allow myself to get into situations that feel like sticky in any way.
Right.
But I was in London and had to self-tape an audition and I had nobody to help me. And so I like, my manager helped me find someone online that like does it or whatever. And it was like a production house. And like uh-huh. I thought it was like going to be like a casting place, and then we set it up to do it at night because it was like my schedule and whatever. And so I ended up having to go very far away. So I took a cab there because I was like, well, I could take the bus, but I don't know where I'm going. I'm just going to take a
right.
cab, and it ended up being like really expensive. But I was like, whatever, let me just get this done. I'm in an apartment complex. It's the dead of night.
And this is just someone who's agreed to tape.
Yeah, and I thought it was going to be, it was called like a, they had like a name where it was like someone's uh-huh. like productions where I thought it was going to be like a casting house.
Sure.
And it just was an apartment complex. And I felt like, I mean, I've watched Black Mirror and like they do a lot of shots like in these weird, out of the city
yep.
apartments
sure.
where it's like weird yellow lighting. And that's where I was. And I was like, oh, I'm going to die.
Oh my God.
I was like, the guy dropped me off. He's like, you know where you're going? And I was like, yeah, I'll figure it out. And then I was like, no, I don't. And I don't like this. And I should have just gone home. And like, what am I doing? But I need this audition and like whatever. Oh. Like, I still had like the pressure on myself to like do it. And I mean, right. I found the place and it was like a nice girl. And like, it was in her apartment. She had a room set up with like cameras and it was like, as legit as it's going to be in someone's house, you know, but like her like big tall guy roommate was like watching through like a glass door at one point.
Oh,
and like I was
no.
like, dude, just go away. And I was like sweating and like I did it and it was fine. And then I got out of there and like ran to the bus and I was like, I should not be doing things
right,
that make
right.
me feel this way
right.
anymore. Like I should have just gone, that's weird. I'm going to get in the cab and just go back. Like
sure.
I don't need to do this at all.
Oh my God. And also you feel like I'm being an idiot for being scared. Like,
right,
all
right, because then it was fine.
Like,
she was like a young girl. It was like, nothing's going to happen.
But then you're like, but I've got to trust my instincts, and this isn't right, and why am I doing this, and why? And then, I don't know. I always go through this whole spiral of like, yeah, like I should be past this, and why am I? And, oh my God, I feel like such an idiot if I end up dead from
right.
this. And like,
that's what this was all for? I had to do a self-tape for a pilot
right,
or something?
Right.
Like, no.
And it's already, I mean, I hate self-taping auditions because like if I'm in the room, I can go in and be like an idiot or whatever. But even when I ask a friend to help me with it and
it sucks.
It feels so vulnerable to be like, here's me auditioning for this thing. And
yes.
So then you add to it. You're like, I'm going to some stranger's house that I don't know. I'm going to be putting myself in front of them. And this is going to be like,
and I have to do my best.
And I have to do my best.
And they don't even know what's going on.
And I'm trying to get this job. And exactly.
It was so brutal. And I left being like, what is going on? Like, I took like two buses back for like an hour and I was like, I'm insane. This is insane. I need to just like know better. But
right, right. I know.
Like I should have like looked up how far it was and been like, I'm not going to go that far. Like
right.
the end.
But also, you know, just don't, you know, you're also, you know, you're like, I'm in London. I don't know if it's that's just where
right,
you go. And
right.
then if you had shown up and it was like in the middle of some, you know, complex with like, and you had seen all the like, you know, you're like, oh, it just looks like a casting studio.
Right.
And then it'd been fine.
No, and I ended up having to do more and I found another person and they did it out of their house, but it was fine and he was cool and it was like, it made it all normal because he mm-hmm. was like a comedy guy and whatever. And
okay.
It changed it all, but I was still going up to his house going, I'm going up to someone else's house again.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing?
What am I doing?
Yeah.
And why? And so... so nuts.
Because you don't know what you're going to get. But.
No.
But it just feels wrong to turn down work and under any
yes.
circumstances.
I know. I mean, there's always that part of you that's like, well, this could be the thing or this could be, you know. And I think we also, it's like, I mean, I moved out here like the summer after the Blair Witch came out. And all these things that everyone says, it's going to be that. And so
right.
you're like, well, I know it's going to be really low budget, but it'll be a great experience. And somebody wants me as an actor. Like, I have to
yeah.
get over that thing that I've had all my life of like, somebody's interested in me and they're going to, you know, and I'm going to have to pay a lot of money and I'm going to have to like put myself in danger and probably be like humiliate myself in front of strangers, but it'll be worth it because it's a job, you know? And then it's
yeah.
like, oh my God. And then I get so resentful when, you know, my time and energy are wasted, but you're just like, God, it's just, but I also know they're the people who don't ever put themselves out there. They don't do live shows. They don't write their own stuff. They don't go to these things and they don't work.
Right.
And so I'm like, and there's also that. And I'm like, well, you don't really, you know, put it out there. You don't put it out that you are interested in doing stuff and they miss things. So.
Yeah, and I think there are enough times where the risk pays off. Or like,
yes.
Or it's awkward, but it is good or whatever.
Right.
And so you're like,
right.
It was worth it. And plus, all those experiences make it easier when you're doing something more intimidating and you're like, well, I've been in someone's weird, you know, or
exactly.
I shot a thing at Runyon Canyon. I can do this other thing or whatever.
Right. Like, and, yeah. And I also think, too, the more you do stuff, it's like, you know, I do think there is a method to staying busy all the time so that when you are on something really big or in front of somebody really intimidating or like, oh, this is a huge director or I'm working with this actor that I love dearly or this is a huge opportunity for me, it feels just like going to work.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like this big deal thing. You're like, I'm doing this today and then tomorrow I'm in a cab, feared for my life. But I do think there's a real a good thing about all that, about staying
yeah.
busy and not worrying about, you know, the best project for me, because that, you know, people that wait around months and months on the big job, when the big job comes, you're gonna have a miserable time because you're
right.
gonna make it way too big of a deal than it really
no,
is.
That's very true.
Yeah.
And you never know when that weird thing's going to come and it's going to pan out. And, you know, like I was just at this convention and like I just went to, it's called NorwestCon. It's like a sci-fi fantasy convention in Seattle. And I was like, I'm just going to go to this and see what I find. And I'm mm-hmm. always looking, you know, as a writer, I'm always looking for like weird LGBT or adjacent stuff to mm-hmm. cover. And sure enough, I discovered that there is like an active mermaid community in the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
Yeah. It's folks who, like you may have seen on the internet, they just get like these elaborate tails and they just splash around in lagoons and pools
I've
and things.
I've heard of it
yeah.
a little bit.
Okay.
That's so interesting.
Wow.
I walked out into the hotel pool area and there was a mermaid standing up. She had like this fancy like dress that looked kind of like, I don't know, sort of like a Jessica Rabbit thing, only at the bottom was like the train uh-huh. and the dress was a tail. So she was standing up and then kneeling in front of her, she was being proposed to by a man dressed as Gomez Adams.
And it was a real proposal?
It was a real proposal.
Oh my God.
I was like, this
yes.
is the most
Incredible.
Beautiful, weird thing I've ever
Absolutely.
Seen.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You had to
that.
Go there.
Of course. You had to go there for that image alone. You're
yeah.
like, I'm never going to see this again. Thank God. How great is it? And when I was in Seattle, we went to like a party. Was
oh,
it
yeah.
like a furry party?
We
or?
Went to the furry slash pup party.
Yes.
I forgot
Wait,
about
what's
that.
Pup?
Yeah. So pup is like, it's animal role play.
Okay.
And so sometimes it's sexy, sometimes it's not. It usually is. But yeah, so it's like, it's kind of like furry minus one. So... it's just like putting on a dog mask or like a paws or something. And you're like, do obedience training and stuff like that. And it's a fun, sexy time.
It's something that I'm so not into personally, but I'm fascinated by. And I went and I'm so glad Matt took me because this thing is, I was like, and it was really fun. It was very positive and supportive. And it felt very much like it was like a safe space for people to just kind of be whoever they wanted to be and do whatever they want, you know. And it didn't, when I was there, I mean, I don't think we were there very long. It didn't get like dirty at all. Or it was just like, it was a dance party. So it was mainly people in like costumes dancing around. And I think there's something about for a lot of people, and I think a lot of introverted people or maybe extroverts as well in a different way, putting on this mask and like being obscured, they were so free.
Mm-hmm.
Like seeing these animals, I'm like, I have no idea what you look like underneath there, but this animal dancing around is so happy and free. And I kind of got it when I saw it.
I was just thinking of Michael Jackson's kids, how he would take them out with like masks on.
Oh, yeah.
But it probably was kind of good for a while
yes.
because no one knew what they looked like when they were out playing by themselves
right.
without
exactly.
him.
Exactly. No, that's really smart. And you do have to think that when you're Michael Jackson and think
yeah.
about like, oh, my kids are in danger. And you know, and kids in general, I mean, I'm very careful not to even name my niece and nephew on
yeah.
stuff because it's just sort of like, it just takes one person to get the wrong idea and, to, you know, and know what they look like and what the, you
know. I know. It's so sad that that is how it is now because
yeah.
I've had the same thing where I want to post a picture of my nephew and then I'm like, but who am I posting it for at this point? Because, I mean, okay, it's really about just I want to share it because I think he's cute. But
right.
I can just think that myself because there's probably one freaky weirdo out there who I have to be worried about.
Yeah.
And I hate that I even have to consider that.
I know. But it's definitely smart to consider. But I think also we're so wrapped up in, you know, image and now with everybody, you know, just our culture. And there's something about that. I never got the furry thing. Because I was so like, what is that? You put on this costume and you guys all play together and stuff. And then you get it where you're like, you lose all of your identity and you get to become someone else. And I'm like, oh, I'm an actor. I understand that.
That completely. Really does make sense.
And I understand like, oh, I have so much more power when I'm on stage playing an asshole than I ever feel like I have in life. I have so much more control over how I want to present myself. And yeah, you can just sort of, you know, you can live your dreams and you can be with other people who are not going to judge you and think that you're weird. And so it was very supportive. Also, I didn't know as some, like, could I go as a, is there a name for non, I think there is.
You might be called a mundane.
A mundane. Oh, yes. I love that. I could go as a mundane and not have people be weird and rude to me or think that I'm, you know, sort of ogling them and kind of trying to...
You're a tourist.
Exactly. Because I'm like, no, I'm here for your party and I want to see what's going on. And I mean, you know, just like anything else, I don't think, you know, but I'm certainly not there to like take pictures and point and laugh at the zoo, you know.
When I was... years ago, there was this documentary that came out called, I think it was called Born in a Barn. It was about people who do pony play, which is basically pop play about your ponies. And so I reviewed this thing and I wanted to do a little research when I was reviewing the film. And so I tried to join a pony play online community and, you know, filled out this form, like an application to join this like social network.
Wow.
And I was rejected. They said that they didn't think I would take it seriously enough.
Oh, wow.
And they're probably right.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me. I just wanted to learn about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, there's a time and a place to learn about people and there's a time and a place to be like, all right, I'm just going to back up. I mean, it would have been like a bachelorette party at a gay bar.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, like, you know, to go back to what you're saying, like, the people that have met one gay person, it's like, at a certain point, I just want to be a person and I don't want to be interviewed and I don't want to be studied and I don't want you to learn from me right now. I want to be free to go and do this thing without anybody there, you know, documenting it.
Right.
Anyway, Lauren.
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay, so I'm really hoping I haven't shared this on a recording before. So
I hope not
either.
Well, you'll be disqualified.
but I don't think that I have. But anyway, I was thinking about this story, this thing that happened when I was little, and I what really like, I don't know. In my whole life, I've never really understood liars or like just straight up mean people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always shocked when you find out someone was just lying or something. Like,
yes.
It blows my mind. But there's this story that my family kind of like really holds on to from when I was little. I was in second grade and we had classes where like we would have reading, we'd have one teacher, and math, we'd have a different teacher. And so it was kind of like our first step into like going to different rooms for different things. Like usually you have one teacher who does it all. And it felt very like adult. But I had this math teacher and she was the meanest woman ever in the world. And
second grade.
Yeah. And I mean, my brother had had her and she had made him cry because he wrote a 2 backwards. And like, she's just so mean. And she looked like a witch and she was evil. And we lived right by my elementary school. We lived across the street. So I would see the teacher sometimes out of school and like they would sit, my kindergarten teacher and my second grade teacher would like sit in their cars and smoke right outside my house. And they just have like their big skirts hanging out. Like it was kind of amazing looking. They had so much makeup on. And
these women.
The big hair, like very early 90s, like.
And who were they putting makeup on for?
Don't know.
What was their audience? Like, I want to know, like, who would, like, give you a high five for being mean to a 7-year-old?
And blue eyeshadow. Oh, these,
gross.
Like, gypsy sort of. My kindergarten teacher had, like, gypsy outfits, and then my second grade teacher was more buttoned up, but she was just a bitch. And so I had her for math, and she... There was one day where we had to do this exercise that I still think is very challenging. We had to look at a wall and like the base of the wall and mark how tall your parents would be like laying down against the wall.
Oh.
Which I think is like extremely difficult to conceptualize.
I couldn't do that now.
Yeah, I have no idea how far down the wall I would be. So my dad is 6'5" and I was a child. So to me that is a giant.
It's a giant to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I marked him really far on the wall. I mean, it was probably the whole fucking wall. I was like, he's that tall. And then she was like, she berated me about it. She was very mean. She made me cry.
Oh my
God. I felt like an idiot. And that was that. So then I went home that day and I told my mom, she made me cry. Like, I didn't want to tell her. I was like, she made me cry and whatever. And my mom was so upset because this was the second time, you know, that we'd had this teacher and she was horrible.
Right.
So my mom went to the principal and started talking to her about it and had this whole thing just like they had a meeting and they talked to my principal's kind of my mom said she was just like she wasn't very firm. She was kind of someone who would like let things slide. But they had this meeting and so that principal went and talked.
She's probably scared of these smoking harpies.
I know. And the principal, I guess, talked to the teacher, whatever. It was all getting worked out. My mom was like very happy. She was like, I went and talked to her. It's good. So then I was in my reading class like a couple days later, and I got called out to go down to the math class and talk to her, like, in her room.
No.
And my stomach just turned, and I was like, oh no, what is she gonna do? And like, I remember so clearly walking down the hall and around the stairs and going down. I saw our janitor, who has been there forever and like always remembers me because I live across the street, and so he's so nice. And I remember seeing him and being like, oh God, like, just, I didn't want to say like what I was doing or where I was going. I was so nervous. I went to the room, and it was very weird because it was like they had all the other kids that are not in my class in there, so it was like a different world.
I remember feeling very
weird because it was like I knew them, but I didn't know them. And then she pulled me over to her desk, and she was like, don't you ever tell your mother that I made you cry.
Don't you ever.
And she scolded me for telling my mom about it. And then I cried again. And I went home. And I mean, I don't remember. My mom, I'm sure I told my mom that I cried again, that she told me that. And she never got fired, though. She had tenure, I think. So she was there for many years after, and was put down to first grade eventually. So she was brought to even like...
Oh, even better. Kids. Yeah, great.
Anyway, it just haunts me forever because it was so horrible. I was like, what? And now that I'm an adult, because we talked about this story like my whole life, but now that I'm an adult, I'm like, what kind of person are you that you would punish a kid for telling the truth to their parent and make them cry again? And you're just mean to little kids. Why do you even want to work in this field? I'm just blown away.
You're not making any money.
No.
There are plenty of other things you could be doing. If you make a kid cry once, you cross a line, and then it's bad enough that she's going to call you down there even to say, listen, I'm sorry I made you cry.
Right.
We're going to try to get through this. Because then you're already feeling like, oh, I'm on eggshells with her, and she with me. And it's going to be this weird thing. Like, let's just forget about it. That's the thing too. As a kid, you're like, I don't want to talk about it again. I'd rather not cry.
Yes.
I'd rather the whole thing not happen.
And but then picturing her calling me down in the other class, like knowing I'm in reading and being like, okay, you should get her down here so we can have this conversation. Like, so humiliating.
And I mean, I always talked about, I had a great upbringing with my parents, but I had a horribly abusive childhood due to teachers.
Really?
There were some of the worst human beings in my, like the best and worst people became teachers, I think. And there are people who changed my life forever for the good, who inspired me. I wanted to be a teacher. I went to college to be an English professor because those are my favorite people, my best teachers. But the worst teachers, I was like, there is a, like you said, a mean streak. They're probably mentally ill. They're deeply unhappy with their lives. And all they want to do is crush you. And they're intimidated by intelligence, creativity, uniqueness. They don't like their unicorns. They don't like it. You're falling out of line and they don't want you there. And, you know, all they want is like, you know, answer the questions. You know, turn in the answers, you know, whatever. They want those B students. That's all they want.
No, and we had more in my elementary school than I'm thinking of now where I'm like, they were just scary. Like, we would be like, oh, that one's scary. I hope you don't get
her.
That's
the mean one.
Right.
And it's like, well, that shouldn't be possible.
No, I did, my very first solo show I did was about terrible teachers that I've had over the years. And I talked about it in seventh grade. I had a teacher that humiliated me, and she went to church with my parents, and I didn't care for her jokes, and she was a horrible teacher. And seventh grade was the worst year of my life. It was my Welcome to the Dollhouse year, and I was called fag every single day of that year, and I was very exhausted and depressed at school and not liking life. And I would put my head down on the desk, and I didn't care for her non-teaching environment that was happening in there. And she would put on Dead Poet Society and try to act like that was her, like she was Mr. Keating. And she would just do nothing, and she would just, you know, and I just was like, this is a waste of time. And put my head down on the desk, and she would start to make fun of me and just mock me, and I just wouldn't have it, and I just wouldn't play along with her. And then she told my parents that she thought I was on drugs when I was in seventh grade. And it was like, no, I'm just depressed, and I'd rather just, I'm here for an education, you know. And so that was one of the stories, and I told another one about a teacher in high school having a nervous breakdown. And then in college, I had Maya Angelou, who was a horrible human being, which I talk about a lot of other things. And so it was just
Maya Angelou?
Maya Angelou, yes.
I know why the cage bird sings.
Horrible, yes.
Horrible?
Horrible human being,
Oprah's
Maya Angelou.
Oprah's surrogate mother?
Yes. And I'm sorry to open that can of worms at the end of it. But like, yes.
If there's an episode you can turn me to hear.
Oh, yes. I talked about a lot on other things. And I, you know, that was the thing. That's where I start. My very first line of the show was, I don't suspect to make any friends here tonight by telling you all that I think that Maya Angelou is an asshole. And because she was one of the worst human beings I've ever spent time with.
Wow.
She's awful. Just obsessed with her own celebrity. Quoted herself constantly. Really, really proud of every word that crept out of her teeth. And just had this, like, I'm smiling through the pain of existence always.
Oh.
And talk about a liar, a complete liar, and like, oh my God.
Doesn't that blow your mind when people lie, though? I'm just so like, wait, what? What?
It's crazy. But, and also, you know, you're like, she was, you know, basically Paris Hilton about her celebrity, which I would understand for Paris Hilton, but you're a poet, and the way you drop names and the way you act about how everyone thinks you're so amazing, and you actually don't have anything really interesting to say, and there was horrible stories about things that she did. I mean, she got $250,000 a year from Wake Forest to just basically show up and talk for three weeks a year. She would do a class that met like twice a week for 3 weeks. And she got $250,000 a year. And the last like 4 or 5 years, she never even showed up. But she still made that money.
And because
the college could advertise like Maya Angelou teaches here. So, like, these amazing professors who are making so much less than that, who are actually working their asses off, you know, are like, having to be in her shadow forever. And, like, you know, and she would throw off her classes onto, like, other teachers who were wonderful, but then the class would be upset that Maya wasn't there. And she wouldn't call you by your first... You couldn't call each other by your first name, so, you know, I would have to call you, but, you know... you know, Mrs. Lapkus and Mr. Baum, like, I couldn't know your first name.
What?
We shouldn't assume familiarity with our neighbors.
Okay.
And all this just bullshit that was all about her. It was all about don't assume familiarity with me. And it was, you had to call her Dr. Angelou. Yeah. And it was like, she was a crazy person. And you're like way too complicated to be this, like, this thing that this Mother Teresa that everyone thinks is so great.
Yeah.
You're an asshole. But anyway, that was like my first show. And a lot of it was just about like, I was teaching improv at the time and I was a teacher and I was just like, this is my fear. Like, I don't want to be any of these people.
Right.
I don't want to be the person in class who's walking in and naming all the people that I know and have worked with and want you to think I'm so amazing. Cause, or the person who's going to shame and humiliate someone, or the person who's just going to have a nervous breakdown, but the really fascinating thing about that show to me was the amount of people that came up to me afterwards and wanted to just tell me their terrible teacher story.
Wow.
Because we all have them.
Yeah.
Because there's so many that are really like, and it's crazy that you're like, you know, your parents do the best that they can and they raise you and then they just send you off. And when you're in elementary school, you're spending 8 hours with usually one person,
yeah.
You know, that's in charge of you, that's basically shaping you through like most of your day. And you know, 5 days a week, 180 days a year, that's
it's a lot. Well, my mom is a teacher and she taught preschool for a long time, then first grade for
my mom taught preschool.
Oh
yeah.
Great. But I think it's even sadder thinking of my mom sending me off to someone mean when like she was my teacher for preschool and it was like the best experience, and then like I come home being like, this lady's mean to me and I don't know why, and like I don't know what's going on, and like she can't be there to see, and meanwhile she's like shaping other people's lives in a great way, like all these other kids get to have my mom be a nice lady.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah, like I'm just trying to imagine the thought process of a person who comes home at night and they're like, I really made some kids cry today. That was great. I did a real good job.
You have to be a piece
put them
of
in their
shit
place.
Yeah,
to like do that
shit
every day and not
I
change.
Showed them.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, yeah, like I don't understand like what you get out of that and what pleasure you do, like what power do you need?
Yeah.
You know, there was one lady that taught at my high school, my algebra teacher, Ms. Fletcher. and she was so into gossip. Like she loved gossip and all of our bullshit, our high school bullshit. And then we realized, you know, that because she went to our high school as a student. And it's like, she kind of never left high school, you know? And she was like a really good student, but that was her thing. And I was like, oh, she's just loves high school.
Oh my God. Wait, you just reminded me of this person. We had this gym teacher who was like really hot, like this young woman, and she was like probably like 25.
Uh-huh.
And she came to our high school and started teaching, and it was like all the boys were like going insane for her. And she would kind of flirt with them. And I mean, she
definitely liked it.
And then one kid slapped her on the ass one day,
oh,
and
boy.
She got so mad. But it was like, you did kind of set this precedence of like, we joke like this, we flirt. I mean, he should never have done that. It's disgusting.
Of course, of course.
Side note about her, I always wear my seatbelt in cabs because she didn't do that in a cab one time, and they came to a sudden stop and her face went into the glass and she knocked out her teeth.
Oh, no.
Oh, my
God. So always
God.
Wear a seatbelt, especially in the back of cabs, because people think they don't have to for some reason in cabs.
Right,
but,
I know. Yeah.
But I don't know if I interrupted your story.
No. I love that.
Remembering her.
Well, there was, that's the other thing, too, when it's like, you're 25 and you want to still be you're like, where can I go and be? It's like Matthew McConaughey and Dazed and Confused, like that person who's, because we had a drama teacher that she was like early 20s and she was directing the play, but she would also smoke with the students and she cussed.
See, that's so
and you
weird.
Call her, I don't remember because I never worked with her. I didn't, but like she, I worked with her. I work with my teachers. But she would call and make everybody call her by her first name. And there was that thing where, you know, and you're like, I know she's fucking one of the students or she wants
yes.
to, or she's been putting that energy out there. And that's that thing where you're like, yeah, of course that kid should never have slapped her ass. But she's so wanting to be this. What are you? I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I don't mean to sound like she was wearing a short skirt. What
no,
do you
no,
expect?
Because that's what I got afraid that I was saying. But
it's a thing where you're like, no, there's something psychologically where you're like, you want to be worshipped in that way.
Yeah. Mm. And you're allowing them to flirt with you and you're flirting back. Like if a boy is going to think that he can do that to a teacher, they must have said enough things to him that made that seem okay.
Absolutely.
Like, and he wasn't a kid that was like really, I wouldn't have put him in that category.
Right,
so it's like,
right.
Yeah.
And it does work both ways. You have to be able to see both sides of those stories sometimes when you're like, you're an adult.
Yeah.
You have an ability. Like, even like I teach adults in at the Groundlings, like most, I mean, I have students that are older than me, but everybody is at least like 20 or older. So it's a different dynamic, but still I'm in a power position.
Yeah.
Like still, I mean, I could definitely get away with things and people go, oh, I need you to like me. So yes, I'm going to go along with this,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's like, no, you have to be aware. Like, That's not okay.
Well,
that's
I remember that happening in Chicago. That there were certain improv teachers who would always date students.
Oh,
where you're like,
well, we're forbidden.
Yeah, oh, really?
I think I could say this. She certainly wouldn't give a shit. But it goes all the way back to Kathy Griffin, because Kathy Griffin used to date so many students, and to this day, I mean, think about when Kathy Griffin was teaching the Groundlings. It was a minute ago.
Yeah.
And to this day, they're like, you cannot, we're not allowed wow. to, we're not supposed to really hang out with students while they're in our class, which I understand completely.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
We're also in charge of their future. Like, we have to decide if they move to the next level or not. And
it really complicates it.
It's very complicated. Even when in my class that I love, we'll have like a party afterwards and they want to be like, come over to our house, we're having a party. I'm like, I'm not going to go because I'm going to go and then hold court the whole time and everybody just wants to talk to me and it's going to be exhausting for me. And I don't need that. I don't need an audience like that. And I want you guys also to be free to talk shit about me. But I also just don't want, you know, because you do. They're students that you, and they walk in the door and you're like, oh my God, I love this person. They're so wonderful. Uh-huh. But I can't show that favoritism, and I'm certainly not going to socialize while we're in class. The minute we're not in class, we can be friends. And some of my best friends I met, I was their teacher. But that's happened later and organically. After the fact,
right.
not
yeah.
during.
Well, part of being an adult is just having boundaries and maintaining reasonable boundaries.
Right.
Yeah. I had two teachers that were really meaningful to me in high school. One of them was a physics teacher who maintained reasonable boundaries. He was a great friend to the students in a like responsible way, and he would encourage interests and stuff, but we knew nothing about him outside of school. And, you know, I got little glimpses because he once advised my friend and I about how to turn down a drink at a bar. And he detected something, I think, in my friend, who was like, she's going to grow up to be the kind of person who's going to be offered a lot of drinks at bars. Mm. And I think he was also preparing
not
me
an
for
alcoholic, but someone who's just going to be offered a lot of drinks at bars.
She was a very inviting person.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And
great.
then I think he was preparing me for gay bars.
Sure.
And, you know, we talk a little bit about gay bars and about the dynamic of gay bars, but in very general terms. And then after I graduated, then it was, you know, first name basis. And then he would email
right.
me occasionally.
Of course.
And then he introduced me to his partner and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. Well, there you go.
Yeah,
and that's a different
that's
thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that I'm friends with teachers of mine now that you know, and I have so many that I'm still in touch with, and it's a very different dynamic. But while you're in that, it's just like, but I also just feel like if, you know, if any friend of mine is directing me in something, they're the director for that amount of time. They're not just, oh, that's my friend. No, they're in charge of me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do what they tell me to do, and I'm going to do that. And they have to, that responsibility. And when you're in charge is like, yes, I have someone there that's vulnerable, and I do have to have boundaries because I could spend, you know, I could spend my entire classes just talking about my opinions about movies, and my class would just let me talk. Like, I have to be the one to go, hey, let's work.
And I've had those teachers
yes.
that just will talk forever. They're like, are we going to do the thing that
right.
we came here to do?
Why am I paying for this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, I had this other teacher in high school who, like, was the opposite of that. Like, he was really meaningful to me. He taught me a lot. He was a history teacher. And he was very, like, I can't remember if it's right brain or left brain, but creative. It was all like,
right
about being creative about history, which, great.
I think it's right brain.
I almost said left brain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so, like, one of his things was, like, you had to have a journal and you had to just, like, write your thoughts about what we were learning about history. And I loved that. And he was like, dates aren't that important. You can always look dates up, but you have to think about why this meant something.
Oh, my God. I wish someone
teacher.
Had said that.
That
to me, because
me
I was like,
too.
I don't get the dates. I hate history.
Exactly. Exactly.
But he also was the advisor of the literary magazine that we had in high school. And so he encouraged us and put all this stuff into the magazine. And so, like, he never put the brakes on anything that we did. And
That's great.
Put out this literary magazine that had some rather inappropriate things in it. Like,
of
somebody
course.
Identified a teacher, like, and had, like, this very unflattering, like, writing about the teacher, who was, by the way, he was, like, a fourth grade teacher that she wrote about. And the word got back, like, through the school system that she had written about him. And he was livid about this. And
then we had,
like, I wrote pornography. Like, just, like, a sex scene, like a lurid sex scene.
I love it.
Featuring between Christopher Columbus and Queen Isabella.
That's awesome!
Because I thought that was hysterical, but it was also very graphic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, like, there was stuff like that. And the school was just, like, very unhappy about this. And the teacher got in big trouble. And later he got fired for smoking. I think it was for smoking pot with students. I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was certainly something that happened. And so he just got in a huge amount of trouble. And I felt terrible guilt because I was like, oh, I put all this stuff into the literary magazine. And I got him in trouble. And looking back, he really should have been the one to
He should
be
have been the one to say no. Yeah,
exactly. He was the grown-up. But, right. like, for me as the kid, like, I felt like I had done something wrong by not having boundaries.
Well, and that's the problem when, you know, when people talk about abuse, you know, there's a whole thing with abuse, when a child abuse, because you, as a kid, you're like, this is great, you know,
right.
he's giving me candy and what he's doing to me feels good. And then he gets caught and then you feel guilt. And then you're like, I hate that this felt good. You know, all that. I mean, that's all that is the same. And obviously he was not that, you know, kind of person probably, but also he didn't, what part of him didn't know, like, yeah, don't get high with students. That's just dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, on top of everything, like, you know, just like, you will get caught.
Yeah.
They will talk because the first thing students want to do is come back and be like, oh my God, I just got high with Mr. you know, whatchamadoodle.
Right. And, like, he would take us on, like, day trips to Bard College. So he used to go to Bard College, and one of the students, his former students, went to Bard College. So we went on this, like, long day trip to Bard College, just hung out at a college with our, I was his student when this happened. And it was just like a really friendly, let's go to Denny's kind of hangout. And I'm like, this is maybe, like, at the time, I had no idea.
You're just excited.
Anything.
You're like, this is awesome.
Fun.
Right.
But then, like, this is so adult and forbidden.
Right.
But then looking back on it, like, even just a year or two later, I was like, oh, weird. Like, I don't think that was okay.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure because I'm not a grown up yet.
Exactly. And you, as a kid, you're like, they all know more than me. They know the answers. I don't. I'm a kid, right? I'm told all my life that I don't know and that people older than me always know. And, you know.
Yeah. And there were teachers who hated when they were aware that you were aware of that.
I
had a teacher who, he would mess with me, but it was like, it made me so mad. And I like have this very distinct memory. It was a TV radio class. My school had like this thing. It was really cool. And we could like practice using cameras, like TV cameras and stuff. And there was a camera in the classroom and it would go to the TV and like a live feed or whatever. Uh-huh. And he, and I hated him. And I thought he was like really creepy and like a pervert kind of guy. He was just like very like, ugh. And I just didn't like him. And I really always in high school would like show my feelings like to anyone. So I didn't like him. And I was just like very sour to him all the time. But he would like use it as like a way to like, I don't know. He would zoom in on my face on the screen while I was like pouting.
Oh.
And he'd be like, you have a face for the camera. Oh. And like say like creepy things that were creepy to me. But I'd be like looking like in the camera like really mad. It's actually kind of funny now. But like I actually look back and I'm like, that was really inappropriate because I was really uncomfortable and I really didn't like it. Like it is kind of funny as like a story, but like it's gross and weird when I was like, he's a pervert and he makes me uncomfortable. And then he would like zoom in on me in a creepy way. It's like,
meanwhile, he has all these cameras set up at his house, like Sliver. Like, you know, like it's just like everywhere cameras. Oh, well, on that note, if you're a teacher, don't be a creep. Inspire kids. Yes. Don't take them out and get high with them or film them or just like, you know better.
Yeah.
Like
don't
basically,
be mean.
Don't be mean. Just like be a human being. You've got like young, vulnerable, shapeable minds in front of you and just be aware of that. Or just don't be a teacher. Like it's terrible money. You have no respect. Like just do something else. Like, you know, I don't know.
Start a rat hole production company.
Yes.
You don't have to pay people much.
Yeah. All you have to do is take Polaroids of them topless at a Wendy's, show up with two crisp $20 bills and your own setup, you know, little camera and film them fight. And then tell them they're aliens.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. BTW.
I love that. Well, I'm going to thank my guests, Matt Baum and Lauren Lapkus. Thank you so much for coming to the show, you guys.
Thanks for joining.
This is wonderful. Delightful.
So
everybody, this has been another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revolutions. I said Minor Revolutions, but I meant Revelations. Goodbye.
Feral Audio.